from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, the University of California system is looking to increase tuition for the first time in 6 years. UC officials say the increase would not apply to low-income students and that the money would be used for more financial aid, faculty, and programs. But protests are expected. Opponents say the UC system should do more to find other sources of funding. We debate the fee hike next on Forum after this news. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Later this month, UC Regents will take up a proposal to raise tuition by 2.5%, or about $300. Out-of-state students would see a tuition increase of 5%. Most students would also see some fee hikes. Similar increases are being proposed at Cal State University as well. Supporters of the hike describe it as modest and say the funds are needed for more faculty programs and financial aid, but students and other opponents say the system should find the money somewhere else. We dig into the proposal with Nanette Asimov. She's higher education reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. Good morning, Nanette Asimov.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks also to Diane Klein. She's press secretary to the president and executive director of strategic communications at the University of California Office of the President. Good morning, Diane Klein.
Good morning.
We're also joined by Giovanni D'Ambrosio. He's undergraduate committee chair for the UC Student Association. Good morning, Giovanni D'Ambrosio. Giovanni, are you with us?
Sorry about that. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And am I pronouncing your last name correctly there?
Yeah, D'Ambrosio.
Great, thanks. Nanette Asimov, I want to start with you. If you could just lay out the numbers, the increase, what is being proposed exactly and how will it change what current tuition is and what it'll go up to?
Sure. So students always pay a combination of basic tuition and mandatory campus fees and student fees and other fees. And the bottom line is that students those mandatory costs will rise from about $13,500 to just under $14,000. Those are tuition and fees combined. So that's the bottom line, and UC will break out what those figures mean. There's about $12,000 in tuition and then various fees combined in that. But that's what they'll pay.
And Diane Klein, do those numbers jive with what you are looking at?
No, actually, they don't. I'd like to clarify. So tuition will increase by $282 for a total of $11,502. And what we call the student services fee will increase by $54 for a total of $1,128. The campus fees that Annette refers to are campus-specific. So those vary by campuses, and those are voted on by students at the campuses themselves for specific projects.
So then with the $11,502 you're saying, plus the additional $1,100,000, we're looking at about $12,600?
Yes, that's approximately right.
And the campus fees you're saying are specific to each campus, so you can't really average that
right.
out?
Right. So for example, a few years ago, UCLA students voted for a fee for a gym, for specific campus needs. So those vary, I won't say widely, but they are different campus by campus.
So, Asimov, you want to say something?
Yeah. So these are nuances of what they call the fees and who offers the fees. But what students pay is, in fact, going to be about a 3% increase. And they will be paying, when you add the tuition and these mandatory fees, just under $14,000 this year. So we had a story this morning because we and other schools were very confused because UC had been saying for years that its tuition was $12,190. And let me just say that tuition has not changed and not gone up since 2011. So what we're looking at here is the first tuition increase in, I guess, by the time it takes effect next fall, if approved by the regents as expected, will have been 6 years since any tuition increase. So for all that time, UC has been describing its tuition as $12,190. And now suddenly, the announcement this week of their proposal, UC was saying that its tuition was just $11,220. So naturally, reporters and others who've been saying, and you know, UC itself has been saying for all this time that it was over $12,000. And so it took more than 24 hours to untangle this. But what it comes down to is that the 12,000 figure, UC had routinely been combining fees in that, including a legal fee, which is fascinating, which I'll tell you about. But so now they're breaking it out. So it appears to be a lower tuition, just 11,000 something instead of 12,000 something. So what the Chronicle did was write a story today that detailed all these fees and all these mandatory costs. And what it comes down to is that students will be paying, if the regents approve this later this month, just under $14,000, which amounts to roughly a 3% increase.
In the title of your article is UC's Tuition Increase, A Case of Funny Math. Diane Klein, what specifically will the funds go toward?
If I might just clarify, I mean, people are talking about what students pay. Two-thirds of our students, undergraduate California students, will not pay any increase in tuition or fees because of our financial aid. As far as funny money, we have a page right on the website that details what everything is in an interest. It's all there in the interest of clarity.
Well, and that what's that website URL?
It's on. I don't have the URL in front of me, but you can just do a Google search, ucop.edu. It's in there on our budget pages.
What would the money go toward? Why are you needing this money?
So, you know, as Nanette mentioned, we haven't had a tuition increase for 6 years. At the same time, we are enrolling more students than ever. We have the highest number of California undergraduates ever. And in fact, last year, we added an additional 7,500 California undergraduates. That is the biggest single increase since the end of World War II. So with that tremendous growth, state funds have not kept up. They've lagged. And so as a result, students have seen some negative effects. So where all of this tuition revenue is going to go is directly toward remedying those situations, such as the high student-faculty ratio, the course offerings, teaching assistance, the student services. The student services fee, in fact, the bulk of it will go toward mental health services, which students have requested, and certainly it's a priority for the UC.
So you're saying if you're able to raise the money that you need, which would, what, all told be about $88 million or so?
That's correct. One-third of that will go directly toward financial aid.
And so if this money comes through, you're saying that students will see more faculty, lower class sizes, more mental health services. Giovanni D'Ambrosio, does that sound justified to you?
Yeah. I mean, I think, first of all, as a student, I'm worried that more scholarship revenue won't actually mean more money for students when our cost of living is calculated often using false averages. So the UC cost of attendance formula uses surveys that often collect misleading prices, like the artificially deflated cost of rent for students who legally cram more residents into their lease, into their apartment or home than their lease permits, without comparing those figures to the actual market value of housing. So the cost of scholarships that I get as someone who lives off campus is much less than the average price of rent in Berkeley, if that makes any sense.
So you're happy to hear that some of the money would go towards student awards? Is that what I'm hearing you say? But you're concerned that it's what might not keep up with, say, the high cost of housing here in the Bay Area and other places where there's high living costs.
Exactly.
Can I ask you another?
If I could just reconfirm
Diane Klein?
Yes, this is Diane. It is very expensive to live around most of our campus, the Bay Area, Los Angeles, San Diego, and we fully recognize that. And in fact, with this tuition increase, if it is proposed, will actually increase the pool for financial aid. So most of these students who are receiving financial aid now, as I said, they won't pay the increase, but their awards will increase beyond the cost of the tuition increase. So, for example, a student who comes from a household earning $120,000 a year, instead of just getting the $336,000, which was the increase, they will get an additional $700. So that additional money, which is more than double the cost of the increase, can be put toward other expenses, housing, books, transportation. Is that a panacea? Of course not. And we're working on housing as a very pressing need. By 2020, we will have an additional 14,000 beds online. With this tremendous enrollment growth, which is, of course, the good news, we need to support that growth. We want to ensure that our students have a quality education, certainly as good, if not better, than those who have come before them.
Giovanni D'Ambrosio, so we're looking at a little more than a $300 fee hike for students, but roughly around there, if you put together Nanette's assertions and also Diane Klein's assertions. And we're looking at financial aid. We're looking at students whose family incomes are $120,000 or less, not having to pay the increases. Is that okay with you? Or for somebody who's sitting here going, well, that sounds fairly fair. $300+ doesn't sound like a lot. What would you say to them?
Definitely. So I think the overarching question for me and several other students is, what is the most sustainable source of funding for education? And continuing to put students to have students foot the bill really isn't the answer. We know that in 2015, just after freezing in-state tuition, the UC Regents voted to increase salaries for the top 15 executives across the UC system. And rather than using any of that revenue to increase class offerings or hiring more faculty back then, the UC decided to sabotage student efforts to secure more state funding for higher education, right? We have a governor that refuses to throw more funds at the UC until they trim some fat. And when UCOP and the Regents refuse to touch the over 10,000 faculty and administrative salaries that exceed the governor's own, it's no wonder that students and their families are the only ones ever being put on the hook for financial crises like the tuition increases. And I think that the enrollment increases in particular are really indicative. How the UC has been handling that are really indicative of that. The fact that I and my fellow students have to wait 4 years until 2020 to see more housing, when at UC Berkeley alone, we saw 750 new freshmen last year, that's going to seriously impact the housing market starting next year as my friends and myself start looking for apartments and houses in the area. We cannot wait another 4 years when I already have four friends this year that are homeless, couch surfing because they couldn't find a place that they could afford.
I'm going to open the phone lines right now because we only have Diane Klein with the University of California with us for the first half hour. Join the conversation with your thoughts about this tuition hike. Do you think it's justified? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org, post them on our website, kqed.org/forum, or on Facebook or Twitter, we're @KQED Forum. Diane Klein, can't you find the $88 million elsewhere than from tuition, than on the backs of students?
So for the past years, with lagging state funding, with the tuition freeze, we have instituted a number of savings and efficiencies, and I have a whole list of them in front of me. If we are at the point now, if we do not invest in supporting these students, these new students, the academic quality will decrease. So we're right now at a tipping point. Certainly, we can cut more, but we are in growth mode, and we believe that to sustain this growth and maintain the quality, we have to support it. We cannot be in cut mode while we are attempting to do more and more, and we have been doing it with less, and it's certainly made us more efficient, but it has engendered some negative consequences. What Giovanni just mentioned, the housing crisis,
yes,
that is very real, and we are working on it, and we are also realists. We would love the state to contribute its fair share more to support this growth. They are helping, certainly, after the recession, and we understand the limitations. But I believe there needs to be a real public conversation about what's important for the university, for the state of California. I think Californians tend to take our university system, which remains the best in the world, for granted. We need to support it as well. And we certainly agree with the students that the state needs to step up and do more.
Well, let's hear from our listeners. Jessica in Oakland, good morning.
Good morning. I have a really simple question. I'm wondering why you're over-enrolling. I'm hearing that you're over-enrolling students, and there are extra 700 students, and you don't have room for these students. When I was in Cal, we had no problem getting classes, and I just went back to take another class that I had to take for my graduate studies. And I couldn't get in the class, and I don't understand why you would over-enroll, like, before you have the space for people. That doesn't make sense to me, like, logically. So
Jessica,
simple question.
Jessica, thank you. Diane Klein.
Well, over-enroll, that's a good word. Some people call it over-enroll. Others say we are not opening our doors wide enough. The good news is that we have more qualified high school graduates in the state of California. They deserve a UC education, and we believe it's our mission to provide that if they qualify. I also want to add that this is the most diverse class ever. And, 57% of our undergraduates receive enough financial aid to completely cover their tuition and fees. These are generally not only lower income, but the most ethnically diverse portion of our student body. And they deserve the same quality education. So the good news is that they are qualifying to get into UC, and it's our job, and I believe the state of California's job, to provide that for them. Right now, as Giovanni mentioned, it's tight out there. You know, we're doubling up and tripling up. It's a squeeze right now. So we're cranking everything up. And when we're in growth mode, we need to spend money. And that's what we're doing. Is it going to be perfect? No, of course not. But we're working on it.
A listener writes, there are already homeless students at Berkeley. We cannot afford a fee increase. Middle-income families are struggling to pay already. When will California reinvest in the UC Jewel? This is also talking about the state's obligations. Harry in San Francisco, what's on your mind?
Well, I want to express my support for any higher education that is the greatest leveling tool in America. And I myself, a UC Berkeley grad, I remember the tuition was 212.70 or something per quarter. So that's a big jump compared to the price now. But as long as we have some safeguard against all this increase going to some administrator salary, that's fine. I'm in support of the reasonable increase to make sure UC Berkeley remain at the front of the quality of the education offered its students. The other question I have is, like, it doesn't make sense for the student board something, fee increase and all that, for, let's say, a gymnasium. They won't see until 5 years later where they graduated. So I'm not sure what the point of the student voting on fee accomplished.
Harry,
I'll
thank
take my
you.
Question off the air.
Yes, let me get Diane Klein to respond. He's asking about, you know, is it reasonable the money that's going to executives and administrators? And B, is any of this money going to capital projects?
So let me just take the first part, what we call executives. What does that mean exactly? The highest paid positions at the University of California are physicians and coaches and investment professionals. And these are the top earners. These people are not paid with taxpayer funds. They're at our medical centers. They're in our investment office, that sort of thing. If you're talking about administrators, the number of administrators has actually decreased. Where we have increased our personnel are at the medical centers. We've had a tremendous expansion, and also in student services. With the enrollment growth, we have more counselors, more people in things such as health. Food service, housing, that sort of thing. So the actual number of administrators has gone down. If we're talking about chancellors, who are funded with a mix of public and non-public dollars, they are paid at the bottom or the lower third of what their peers are elsewhere. So there is a misconception there. And of our highest paid employees, 77% of those are professors, most of them at the medical schools.
And Asimov, you look like you want to say something
sure.
to that.
Yeah. So the governor has historically opposed increases in salary for administrators. And when, for example, UC Berkeley's current chancellor, Nicholas Dirks, came on board, they tangled a few years ago because Governor Brown said, hey, you know, this raise that they're giving you from the prior chancellor is too much. So this has historically been a credible argument. Why are the top being paid so much and more than the president? I think the governor has pointed out. While student fees are going up. So a few years ago, what the arrangement was, as Diane said, was that a portion of any raises would come from private funding or foundation funding. And this seemed to be a good, in a sense, a public relations move. But at the same time, then the question has been raised, well, why not use that instead of giving administrators raises from the foundations, why not use that money for students? So it's an ongoing debate.
Well, let's try to get another call in here. Diane in Oakland. Hi, Diane.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Really quick, I am 41 years old, and I'm still under the impression that college is a privilege. And I basically got through my own college by working three jobs, going to a two-year college. And my comment really is I think Diane stated something like this, is that there really does need to be a public conversation about funding for education. However, if you're going to a school like Berkeley and you're in the Bay, you should expect that you need to handle your own housing because it's such a high housing, it's expensive housing market. Maybe that's not the school to go to if you can't find housing. And I don't think it should be a burden of the school to continually take care of the students as far as housing goes. If it's you can only do so much.
All right.
So.
All right, Diane. Well, thank you for registering that point. I appreciate it. And I also want to see if we can get one more call in here before we have to let Diane Klein go. Let's go next to Jose in San Jose. Hi, Jose.
Hi. I'm a product of the California system. I got master's and bachelor's. I worked full time when I was going to school there. I commuted more than an hour a day. It was very stressful, and that's part of the educational process, I think. My daughter is now going into the system. I'm a middle-class person by the Bay Area standards. I can barely afford to send her. It's going to be a tremendous burden on us.
Yes, thank you.
You're going to tax us in order to finance financial aid to pay for housing and psychological counseling. You should listen to yourselves in this conversation.
Diane Klein, is it fair to be constantly putting it on middle-class students? Because you're saying that, yes, very low income would not pay this fee increase.
Well, our tuition is, as I said, $11,502 a year, which is not cheap. However, it is really a bargain in higher education for the quality. I agree. When my daughter was at Berkeley, she worked as well.
And Diane Klein, I'm going to have to interrupt you. Thank you for joining us, Press Secretary to the President and Executive Director of Strategic Communications at UC Office of the President. We'll have more after the break. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking about the University of California system looking to increase tuition for the first time in 6 years. The proposal is for 2.5% or $300+ for in-state students and would go toward faculty programs, reducing class sizes and financial aid, according to Diane Klein, who was with us in the first half. She was press secretary to the president and Executive Director of Strategic Communications at the University of California Office of the President. Staying with us for the second half of the hour is Giovanni D'Ambrosio, an undergraduate committee chair for the UC Student Association, and Annette Asimov, higher education reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. And again, we'd like to have you join the conversation by calling us at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org. Post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. Post them on Facebook or on Twitter. We're at KQED Forum. Giovanni D'Ambrosio, how do you respond to the argument that the UC's hands are tied, that it's really about the state, you know, making the necessary investments and they're just doing the best they can?
I definitely think that's the case, but I would disagree with Diane's characterization of how much UC is doing to actually see that happen. We know in particular that Governor Brown, whether it was in vetoing SB 959 or in public speeches, that he wants to fund the UC more. He just wants to see more fat trimmed. And ultimately, something like a tuition increase is not going to be as sustainable as a source of funding as state increases for funding. We've seen this especially with enrollment increases. Currently, our dorms at UC Berkeley are no longer fire safe because they've been cramming more and more students into the current buildings rather than constructing more. So the housing crisis that I think some previous callers talked about is different in nature than the high cost of housing in the Bay Area previously, because literally housing isn't even being built for first years.
Would some of these tuition increases and fee hikes be easier to swallow if students had more of a say? There was a suggestion by another student leader that said that basically if they could have a say in terms of faculty hiring, in terms of financial aid for students, certain types of course offerings, if they could have more of a voice in that, that they would be more willing to accept these types of increases?
Definitely, but I think that's only part of the question. I mean, if you look at a campus like UC Merced, I think that's a perfect example of students really not having a voice in how their campus money is being spent. For example, Merced is a Hispanic-serving institution, and even though they get more money from the state, for that, they have no resource centers for students of color like UC Berkeley does. Likewise, students had to fight tooth and nail to get funding increases from our own university to pay for more diverse counselors. So even though more had been hired at schools like UC Berkeley, where we voted on fee increases, but because there was no student oversight, we still haven't seen more counselors, even though we footed the bill for them already. That's caused a serious problem for students. So while I definitely agree with that, ultimately the problem is that the UC needs to be pulling its end of the deal by trimming the fat in its university so we can see more taxpayer funding come back to the university.
Well, let's hear from Rod now in Pacifica. Hi, Rod.
Hi, I'm a UC graduate from 71 out of Berkeley. At that time, my tuition was $88 per quarter, and that included health care. Now we're up to $11,500 per year, and students can't get the classes that they need to graduate. Every private business in the U.S. that's in a mature industry is focused on delivering more output for lower cost, finding efficiencies to do that. You've got some folks on. I was wondering how UC is doing in terms of lowering the cost it's spending per student, or are they just throwing more money without measuring that?
Rod, thanks. Sorry, you wanted to finish there?
No, that's fine.
Well, I thank you for that point. Nanette Asimov, how is UC doing in terms of trimming the quote fat, dealing with its costs?
Well, you know, that's difficult to say. I think all of their numbers are all laid out on their website, but understanding it in its arcanity is quite difficult. I don't think that they have reduced the expenditure per pupil. You know, you have to really look at the difference now between what it was in 2010. I mean, think of the at the recession, they were increasing in double-digit increases every other year.
And the tuition.
The tuition. Increases. There were tremendous protests. There were students chasing after the regents on the UCLA campus, throwing things. I mean, there was such anger because UC was actually raising tuition, you know, and depending upon tuition more than anything else. In the intervening years, I think really with pressure from Governor Brown, who has said, look, you really need to reduce your costs, and I want to see evidence of that, and I'm not going to I'm not going to give you any more money if you raise tuition. So he put the pressure on UC to reduce its costs, and, you know, I think they have succeeded to some extent. If you study the numbers, you can sort of see this. And that's why we're seeing an increase now of closer to 3%, or a requested tuition increase of 3% instead of, you know, the 12% or higher that we were seeing
in 2009 through 2011.
Exactly.
Yes. Well, on another question about numbers, Skip writes, increases will fund more financial aid? That sounds weird. Why not just lower the increase and everybody will get financial aid? Are they robbing Peter to pay Paul?
In a way, yeah. The middle-class students or people who are going to be paying this tuition increase, and by the way, students who from families who earn up to $150,000 are eligible for state subsidies. So they won't even be paying the full amount. It's only students from families paying $150,000, whose families earn $150,000 or more, who are going to be paying this amount. And Diane Klein, who was on earlier from UC, says that's about a third of undergrads. But one third of the increase paid will always go back to financial aid. And anybody whose family earns up to $80,000 pays no tuition. And so all financial aid is subsidized by students who are paying the increase, because that's how it goes.
Linda writes, financial aid, in quotes, has become a cruel joke. Unless you are very poor, most financial aid is in the form of loans, which must be paid back. Your guest keeps referring to financial aid as if it shielded students from the tuition hikes. It doesn't. Is this not in the form of grants?
Well, no, it is in the form of grants. I mean, yes, we have a student loan problem in this country. California has less of a student loan problem. That is to say, students graduating, having to pay big debt burdens. I think California's average is just a little bit over $20,000 up for each graduate, whereas around the country, it's far higher, maybe double that. But in California, what I think we're talking about really are grants. So if you have a combination of Cal grants and federal Pell grants, which are not having to be paid back, and then California has a thing called the middle class scholarship, which are these state subsidies for middle class families. You don't have to pay that back, and you don't really have to pay any or not full tuition at UC.
Giovanni Ambrosio, what is your reaction to that? That California provides some of the most generous financial aid in the country, as Asimov is describing.
Yeah, so I disagree with Diane's characterization in that I don't think financial aid is as all-encompassing as she makes it out to be, particularly for middle-income students. For example, a study released by the UC Office of the President last summer, showed that middle-income students are just as likely to experience food insecurity as their low-income counterparts. So in reality, charging more tuition often looks like skipped meals, working multiple jobs, or taking out Parent PLUS loans. And in a state like California, a worst-case scenario for a Parent PLUS loan means that the Department of Education can withhold our parents' Social Security checks, or the cosigner of the loan could lose their driver's or professional license, like meaning they would no longer be able to work or receive an income if their professional license is lost. So an increased tuition can seriously affect our family's livelihood. But beyond just that, mandatory return in financial aid won't go to out-of-state low-income students at all. Last year, the regents voted to completely gut out-of-state financial aid. starting with the class of 2020 to fund the enrollment increases rather than working with the state to get more money. So as a result, Regents signaled to low and median income out-of-state students that the UC does not want them on their campuses. Not to mention, finally, that the blue and gold plan that's used to make sure that students who receive who come from families that make 80K or less a year is not foolproof. It has a four-year cap, so someone like me that works two jobs and can't take the course load to graduate in 4 years will have to pay tuition my fifth year, even though I come from a family that makes about $35,000 a year. Likewise, there are GPA caps on that. So if you're a student who works, it's harder and harder to maintain that scholarship overhead.
Well, let's hear now from Ravi in Mountain View. Hi, Ravi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So for financial aid, we are talking about 80K, 120K, 150K, different numbers, right? But we don't look at from where the student is coming. 120K in Central Valley is not, you know, compared to same as 120K in Mountain View. So why don't we, why don't UCs look at from where the student is coming, and they have just one number irrespective of where the student is coming from?
Thanks, Ravi. Nanette Asimov, why do we have a static number that we apply across campuses, though there is some talk in terms of, you know, campus-specific campus fees varying based on those campuses? But generally, why apply it across the board when there are so many different costs of living in all the different regions of California?
Well, there had been talk of different tuition charges per campus. For example, UC Berkeley, a more elite, hard-to-get-into campus, wanted to charge more. But for equity purposes, that was not accepted. The student services fee, which goes to things like mental health and which is rising, which under the proposal would rise by about $54, is also uniform across campuses. But the campus fee, which is a third fee into all of this, does vary by campus and is dependent upon what students themselves, the student government, vote upon themselves. So there's an average amount of all that, but it does vary by campus.
Let me thank Robbie for the call. And let's go now to Shalu. Am I saying your name correctly in Cupertino?
Yeah, that's correct.
Thanks for calling.
So I just wanted to know how we can hold our schools accountable for the money they spend, particularly our tuition and taxpayer money, because I'm a student at UC Davis, and I know that our school spent around $175K to basically, you know, work on our image online after the pepper spray episode. So I just want to make sure, is there even a way for us to figure out exactly what our school is spending money on?
Shalu, thanks for the question. It's a good point, Nanette Asimov. We were hearing Giovanni D'Ambrosio talking about how they say the money is going to go for this, but then it isn't guaranteed that it will go for this, and how can we hold UC accountable?
Well, I think holding, it's a great question, and the way to hold these UC accountable is to, and that's what reporters do. That's the reason you know that about how UC Davis was spending its money is because the Sacramento Bee did an awesome series of stories exposing how the campus was using their money on publicity for the chancellor. And so it brings to mind something. This is something that the Chronicle broke a couple of years ago, which I don't think anybody would have known, and that is that part of the tuition is an interesting $60 fee that you see includes in the tuition, which is so it turned out that about in the mid-2000s, a lawsuit said that UC owed students money because it had overcharged them without giving them enough notice. It was just raising tuition. And so now it had to pay back some $100,000 or something. And so what UC did was to say, all right, we will pay this money back. And they raised the tuition by $60, and it's this legal fee. And so they just simply charged students the money to pay back the students. So these are things that require some oversight by journalists, I think. And subscribe to a newspaper and you'll be holding these guys accountable and becoming aware of it, just as you are, the scholar.
Nenad Asimov is higher education reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. We're also talking with Giovanni D'Ambrosio, undergraduate committee chair for the UC Student Organization. And to you, our listeners, Kelly tweets, seems like UC created its own financial problem by enrolling too many students. Why not build for growth instead of adjusting after it? John writes, are the 25% of students that are paying tuition increase the only source of revenue for the increase? This does not seem equitable. The entire state benefits from California's higher education system. It seems to me that the cost should be more equitably distributed. Tavon writes, I hope professors are happily compensated and the system actually supports a higher percentage of California students. It sounds like she's saying if these fee increases and tuition hikes do take effect. What are the chances of that, Nenad Asimov? Is it a done deal pretty much if the state does not come through that these will take effect? Or do you think that there are some regents who will oppose these strongly?
Well, there may be some regents who oppose it, but I have yet to see a tuition increase fall by the wayside when the governor doesn't intervene. And the governor last intervened about a year or two ago, and he said, look, don't do it. And so then the governor, I believe it was in 2015, and Janet Napolitano, president of UC, put their heads together and worked out a deal so that the state would increase UC's allocation by, I think it was 4% a year. For each of, I don't know, going through 2019, and that if the state agreed to give that, then UC would hold off on raising tuition. So they rescinded the tuition increase last year that they had already approved. But that was the only time I've seen them rescind or not implement a tuition increase, and that was an extraordinary circumstance. Now they're free to do it, and I suspect it will go ahead.
They're free to do it up to 5% as well. So in some cases, the UC is not pursuing a 5%
hike. Well, I don't
hike.
Think it's 5%. The agreement at UC is that they would do it roughly at the rate of inflation, which is a little under that, actually. And so when I last checked, it was about 3%. But so that is what the proposal is.
I see. I'm sorry. What I read was something about the rate of inflation or no more than 5%. But
that could be. Yeah.
Well, let's hear from more of our listeners. Let's hear from Philip and Martinez. Hi, Philip.
Hi. Good morning. I wanted to call. I'm an educator myself. I have 2 degrees from the University of California and a PhD from the University of Michigan, and worked in California education much of my life. I would like programs like this, or maybe it's its own program, to talk about organizing the people of California, the alumni of our CSU and UC campuses, and government officials to increase the amount of funding that comes from state revenues. Janet Napolitano in the Cal Monthly magazine last issue said that, this is from memory, but I think in the, say, 1980, roughly 52-53% of UC budget was from the state. It's now down to 12. There's something massively wrong with that. That change, I think it's part of the income inequality question, really, that is broader than this. One last comment is a university budget is a very complicated matter, and when people talk about administrators getting paid too much and the small particulars, it distracts us from what the people of California rightly should expect from this fine institution and what our political leadership should commit to paying to support it so that these tuition increases would be much smaller and students wouldn't have to work 2 jobs and live in a broom closet to get through the University of California. That's my
Philip,
comment.
Thank you for that. You raise, you know, important broader questions about all of this. In the short term, though, Giovanni Ambrosio, what are students preparing to do? Are you preparing to, besides going hard at the university administrators, are you preparing to lobby the legislature? Are we going to see protests as we saw, you know, back in 2010?
Giovanni D'Ambrosio, are you there?
Sorry about that. Definitely. So students have been doing work for decades around issues like Prop 13 reform, which would, by taxing corporations, bring back $9 billion a year into state revenue. But there's also another piece of that. While students have been lobbying for issues like Prop 13 reform, we know that a lot of the problem with funding comes within our university itself. Even if we see $9 billion in an ideal world return to the UC through something like Prop 13 reform, we know that groups like the Afrikaner Black Coalition have identified that our university is still spending its money, investing its money in private prisons, no DAPL, for example, the Dakota Access Pipeline through banking with Wells Fargo. Likewise, it's investing in fossil fuels still. So there's a lot of issues that we have been UC students, whether they're organizing with or lobbying with the UC Students Association or not, have been working around to secure more funding from the state. At this point, it's really a matter of the UC pulling its weight and actually trimming the fat to make the UC more fundable. In the past, Governor Brown's even vetoed bills that would put more money into mental health services because he's afraid that the UC isn't trimming that fat. And until it makes large strides in the over like $1 billion over the past 21 years that's gone straight to high-paid administrator salaries, I don't think we're going to see those things happen.
Well, Giovanni D'Ambrosio, I want to thank you for joining us. I know you stretched to be able to stay with us beyond the half hour as well, and we really appreciate it.
Giovanni, thank you so much for having me this morning.
Giovanni D'Ambrosio, Undergraduate Committee Chair for the UC Student Association. Nadia Asimov, I want to jump off also what Philip Martinez was saying earlier, which is this bigger question about the move towards making some public colleges free. In New York, for example, the governor there proposed a plan to make city and state colleges and universities free for students with certain family incomes. There was a statewide poll by the PPIC that showed strong support for making community colleges free and making, you know, state and UC much more affordable and putting more of that burden overall, share it more across the state. Are there discussions like that happening now where we're trying to move toward that in California?
Well, the most ardent discussion on that has been actually in San Francisco, where voters approved a transfer tax on luxury buildings. And there was nothing in that proposition that said that City College of San Francisco would be that the money would be used to make City College of San Francisco free. But the Board of Supervisors passed some non-binding legislation hoping that it would be. And so now there's a discussion, does the city have the money, really, despite the passage of that tax, to use it and make City College free for everybody? And there's been discussion of, well, should it be free for everybody? Because that includes people who can actually afford to pay. And why should it? Or should there be a financial cutoff, as you were saying elsewhere? And so that's a debate right now in San Francisco, because now many states, California especially, aren't sure what the federal funding will be with the new administration, because there's talk of cutoffs of punishing sanctuary cities. So it's a complicated question.
Well, Tricia writes, people are looking back at the good old days when tuition was $112 per quarter and so on. Health insurance alone has increased substantially for employers. So in order to offer benefits to staff, they need to increase funds. Stop comparing oranges and apples. Joe writes, my daughter graduates from Berkeley this May. When I reduce my work schedule by 25% following surgery and a permanent disability, I appealed our financial aid award. The Berkeley Financial Aid Office employee said that I need to stop putting money in my 401k and give it to us. Huh? Trim the administration. Stop dumping grant money into football and pay the teachers. And let's go now to Charles in San Francisco. Hi, Charles.
Hi, good morning. My comment, I guess, is why are we expecting students who are least able to afford their own educations to subsidize other students' educations? I believe I heard somebody on the forum say that about a third of this tuition increase would go for grants or aid, financial aid to other students. And this is at a time when the students can't afford their own tuition. So why would you require them to pay additional tuition to subsidize others? It's a social issue and a public issue that we should bear those expenses through tax dollars, not assessing students that are going to have loans and financial obligations to pay off later in their lives that are, have been funded other students.
Charles, thank you for raising that point. It's an important point in it, Asimov.
You've characterized it exactly. That is exactly what's happening. And I think that UC very, very proudly says that its doors are open to more Pell Grant recipients and first-generation college students and students of color than any other universities in the country, particularly public universities. And so that's a policy question that they've decided to make that happen by assessing this fee, essentially, or by raising the tuition on those who can afford to pay or can better afford to pay. But you've just characterized it well, and it is a debate.
And I want to thank Charles for that. So we have a 2017-2018 budget draft coming out, I believe, next week from Governor Jerry Brown. I imagine this is what universities will be watching closely to see if there will be money in there to avoid tuition hikes. What do you think the chances are of that, Annette Asimov?
Well, I don't think that there will be money to avoid tuition hikes, because that's what the discussion with the governor and UC and CSU people have been for the last 5 years on this tuition freeze. And so the agreement is that they'll be allowed to raise tuition starting in 2017-18. But what we're seeing right now is the start of budget season. You know, the governor is going to unveil his budget proposal, and then there'll be the usual wrangling all throughout the spring. And then he'll revise his budget proposal in May, and then the decision is made in June as to what the final budget will be. And I think that's you're probably likely to see tuition increases not only at UC but at CSU, which is going to make its proposal and vote in March.
Yes, so the numbers I'm seeing around that is roughly the same amount, about $300, though for CSU that represents about a 5% increase. So skirmishes
exactly.
Likely ahead. Well, Nanette Asimov, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
A pleasure.
Higher education reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. I also want to thank Giovanni D'Ambrosio of the UC Student Association and Diane Klein of the UC Office of the President for joining us earlier as well. And thank you to our listeners for their important comments and questions. Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Judy Campbell, Tina Lauerberg, and Susan Britton. Our engineer today is Katie McMurrin. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and Holly Kernan is our executive producer. I'm Mina Kim. Thank you for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.